So, Richie Neal, every once in a while I ask you, in your role as Congressman, ranking member on Ways and Means, am I right about that?
That's right, on the tax subcommittee.
Tax Subcommittee, that's right. In office for quite a while now, you have a chance to see the way it all works. So, is there a chance? We know that the Senate is very much in play, and there's an expectation that Democrats will take the Senate. We don't know if it'll happen, but there's an expectation. But is there a chance they'll take the House back with what you see?
Well, there's a chance. I think that the likelihood remains very uncertain. We would have to turn around a significant number of seats. We're there at 247, and I think we're at 188. And to get to 218, which is the mystical number, is a bit of a challenge. Much of it comes from the fact that we've lost 900-plus legislative seats over the course of the last three congressional cycles. And the problem there is we lost a lot of seats in the years which would be called congressional reapportionment.
Right. So there's a
And
gerrymander that's been going on
it's
by the
the
legislature.
gerrymandered, yes, it is. And in places like Ohio, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina, there is no reason, given the population of those states, that we should have the slant against us as we do. And when you consider that we won millions more votes than Republicans did across the country in congressional elections, they nonetheless have a very, very substantial majority in the House of Representatives.
So, is there a way around that? In other words, if the state legislatures have gone Republican, if they have gerrymandered the congressional districts as they did in Texas, I'll never forget that massacre. It seems to me that there really isn't a way, unless the Supreme Court comes out and starts talking about gerrymandering, which I don't think they're going to do.
Well, they have, as you know, challenged some seats, and in Virginia in particular, in North Carolina.
But
But
only
I
when
think
there's a
that
racial bias, right?
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. When they argue that African Americans were all put in one district for the purpose of electing Caucasians in surrounding districts, if they sense that trend and the case is brought, and I think there's one pending in Mississippi as well, which is called packing, and they pack members of one ethnic group or one socioeconomic group all in one district in an effort to win more seats on the outskirts, that the Supreme Court has been more than happy to challenge. But by and large, there is a process of reapportionment that, let's be candid, it's pretty Machiavellian. And in Ohio and again Pennsylvania, North Carolina, those should be much closer in terms of alignment. They should at least be half, but instead they're very lopsided. And we have, I think, 5 seats in Pennsylvania, 5 in Ohio, and I think 4 in North Carolina. And in each instance, we should have at least double that number.
You mean based on population and who votes Democratic and who votes Republican in the state?
That's correct. And I remember the House of Representatives is constructed on the principle of the 2-year term, which offers great emotion. The Senate, with the 6-year term, obviously it's greater deliberation. But the House speaks to the emotions of the American people, and the Senate, I think, speaks to a longer sense of let's take a second look at this. And the House, because of reapportionment, is constantly being challenged. And I think that when I came here, I'll give you a pretty wild number. There were 269 Democrats.
Wow.
And today there's 188. And we had this discussion this morning at the Democratic caucus. And what's happening to our side in the down ballot questions beyond the presidential race? And I think that clearly you've watched Speaker Ryan try to have it both ways with Donald Trump. One day he's criticizing him, and the next day he says he's voting for him. I think that a similar outcome is apparent with John McCain. You can see that there are at least 3 Republican senators who have said they're not going to vote for him. And I think that the Republican Party right now is very wary of losing their Senate majority and losing a large number of seats in the House of Representatives. Whether or not it's enough, I think at this moment that's subject to great question.
Talk to me a little bit about Elizabeth Warren. Very popular. I live in Massachusetts, as I've mentioned. She's a popular, somewhat to the left candidate, has really put it all in to helping Hillary Clinton. Has that damaged her in terms of her leftist followers?
Well, no, I don't think it's damaged her, but I think that what's happened in the aftermath of the economic recession, there was the first development of the Tea Party, and now I think you're seeing an emerging Tea Party left. And I think that the purity that they demand, I hope that they were not anticipating that Elizabeth Warren was going to be for Donald Trump. And by her being silent, that's what she would have done. So I think that Senator Warren plays a very important role. I was an early supporter of hers. And the other thing about her is that off camera, she is really nice. She's very pleasant to talk to. She's very smart, obviously. But she speaks to a large part of the Democratic base. And I think many of those were Sanders supporters. So the minute that she says that she's for Hillary Clinton, I think that there's an element that says, well, that's treasonous.
Is she courageous to do it?
I think it's very courageous. And I know that she was met with demonstrators in Northampton 3 weeks ago who thought that she was somehow betraying the cause because she said she was for Hillary Clinton. And I think that without Hillary Clinton, I have heard very few, if any, people say that they would prefer Donald Trump on the Democratic side.
So does Jill Stein from Massachusetts, I interviewed her today.
I'm so happy you raised that, Alan, because, you know, when Al Gore ran for president, I was an early supporter of Gore. And you can make the argument, whether it was New Hampshire or Florida, that without Ralph Nader on the ballot, that Al Gore would have been president. And when I hear people say that there was no difference between George W. Bush and Al Gore, that clearly chagrins me, obviously, because Gore would not have taken us to Iraq. Gore would have appointed different members of the Supreme Court, which clearly would not have given us Citizens United. And you would not have seen the science rejectionists as it relates to global warming. And I think that Al Gore would have made a fine president. But when I hear the argument from the purists frequently, they want to have this notion that all 10 candidates on the ballot count. When the truth is, whether we like it or not, there are two candidates on the ballot that count, and the rest is an opportunity for a protest vote. But you hope that good judgment and a good measure of the future will remind all as to what happened in the year 2000. And I think that, again, Al Gore would have made a very fine president.
One can go back to WAMC.org and look up my screaming match with Ralph Nader on that very subject.
Good for you.
On that very subject at the time.
Yeah.
Boy, did I tick off people. I just want to spend 1 minute now on the opioid crisis. Are we making any progress?
We are. And I think that, like gay marriage, I'm really pleasantly surprised with the progress that has been made with the public. And I think that you now are seeing people step forward. I'm going to be hosting an event in Pittsfield with a movie that has drawn considerable emotional attention called Heroin on Cape Cod. The producer will be there. Mayor Tyer and myself, and I hope Mayor Auchinbright from North Adams and others are going to participate in calling attention to this opiate crisis. And I want to congratulate and thank many of the parents who have stepped forward to talk about the crisis situation that they find when they have children that are involved with this horrific addiction. And I also think it's calling attention to how prescriptions are administered in America. And I think Governor Baker has hit the right note by suggesting that there needs to be more beds and more opportunity for rehab. And this is a chance, I think, beyond Democrat, Republican, to talk about an issue that really has created a crisis. Because every family now that I know has another family member that struggles with this addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that there's an opportunity here to begin to treat this the way it should be treated, as the necessity of rehabilitation.
Richie Neal, always wonderful to talk to you, and thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Alan, as always.